Hello, and welcome to another episode of Endeavors. Today's show is a feature interview, and my guest is a local actor, writer, and director here in Toronto. Although as a writer, most of his work has been done on the stage, he has appeared as an actor in numerous television and film productions, including Ransom, Heartland, Killjoys, Cardinal, Orphan Black, Winona Earp, Rain, The Girlfriend Experience, Murdoch Mysteries, Lost Girl, The Listener, Cracked, Saving Hope, Flashpoint, Covert Affairs, Combat Hospital, Republic of Doyle, Kids in the Hall, Durham County, Everest, The Path to 9/11, Sue Thomas FBI, Leap Years, 1-800-MISSING, and as well the films Phantom Punch, The Cry of the Owl, among others. As I mentioned, he is also a writer and director. His first film was the short To Sir with Jizz, the Justin Sider story, and he also was a writer on the documentary Goodness in Rwanda. His latest film project is an adaptation of his original stage play called Pond Life, and it opened this past week on March the 22nd. You may recognize one of the stars of the film, Peyton Kennedy,
from Everything Sucks and Grey's Anatomy.
The guest is Gord Rand, and we talk about all things pond life, working with Peyton, film, theater, documentary, and being an actor in Toronto. This is my conversation with Gord Rand. Gord Rand, hello, welcome. Pond Life. You adapted this from your own play that you wrote. And I know you have experience as an actor, as well as a writer and director. What made you decide that you wanted to bring something from the stage to the screen?
It's a good question. I wanted to get into film direction, and was looking for projects, and I've done sort of short films and all that kind of stuff. Short films, basically. So I'm looking to do a feature, and Pond Life was quite a tight script, and I remember when we were kind of when we were rehearsing it, we'd often talk about, you know, what was happening off stage. If this were the movie, this is what would happen. And I kind of thought, well, why don't we make those offstage moments happen? See how we can adapt it into a feature film. And I was curious to know, like, you know, I knew very well how the play worked well. It was a, you know, it was a popular play. So I was curious, to, you know, just as a kind of artistic exercise, to try to find a way to make that comedy and tension happen on the screen. It's a completely different medium myself. I'm very familiar with theater and writing for theater and how to make stagecraft work. I'm curious to how I might be able to translate that into screen work. But that was a kind of project that I was trying to embark on.
And, you know, there are a lot of things that'll work on stage that won't work in film, and vice versa. Just, it's the nature of the medium. And given that this was your own work that you adapted, what kind of challenges did you find in figuring out, okay, what do I need to take out, what do I need to add, what do I need to tweak in order to make this the best adaptation that it can be?
Yeah. Well, it was I was hoping to go, you know, my original intention was to get a location and start to rehearse it as a kind of Stanislavski exercise in the location, kind of exercising naturalism, and see where we ended up. So we did a little bit of that, but we didn't have the location for long enough. So that became something that had to become a thought experiment more than a practical experiment. So I got together with the cast, and we did a few readings, and I started to imagine the house that I was in at the same time that I was looking for locations, and as I fell in love with locations, I would readapt the screenplay so that I could use certain rooms and move it around the house and so on. And as that happened, it became natural that there was kind of visual storytelling. And right up until when we lost the picture, we were cutting for the most part. Anytime I said to Maggie, I'm sure it's clear about adding stuff. I was like, that's not stuff. It takes time away. It always takes time away and see if you get the pictures, see if it really looks. And that was sort of, because language is the main language of theater. And visuals are the main language. Visuals and sound, obviously, are the main language for film. So it was mainly cutting stuff away. Which sounds simple, but it was. Just cutting it away. And the great thing was that the actors had done it in two incarnations. We did it at the Fringe Festival and we did it again at the Factor Arena. Each time kind of we're able to go deeper into it. And everybody was so engrossed in their characters, we had them kind of very much second nature, that it was a very easy film. And very easy to edit, because the editor would kind of go, if we ever need anything, just go to anybody else on Amazon. And because they know what's happening, they have their own subtext going on the whole time, each character has a plethora of reactions that you can draw from to sort of knit together, kind of weave together this story. And that's one of the reasons why I was attracted to doing it. I mean, well, the actors had so much time with it. And we've had... we've had so much time with it. I'm an actor, primarily, professional actor. And I was dismayed when I moved from theater to film, or theater to screen, that actors were considered quite late in the process. And I thought, well, how are you going to get something good if your actors aren't prepared? And there's no way for them to prepare, because you're passing 3 days before you do it. And I thought, well, this is a way to, with a micro budget, make sure we have high quality acting. Because there's so much energy and effort goes into stagecraft in this country that doesn't get recognized, in terms of story editing, in terms of playmaking, story creation, acting. The craft of creating a character and reproducing that character. But I thought there's tremendous resources that are cheap in making a micro budget movie adapted from a good one. With good actors, which is acting and writing. Long answer to your question.
speaking of good actors, your youngest cast member in this film has gone on to become a star already, and she's only 15, Peyton Kennedy, with Everything Sucks, and then with Grey's Anatomy. And I know you two had worked together before this project. So clearly for you, both as an actor and as a director, you knew that the talent was there for her. But working with a young actor like that, and then to sort of see her blow up in a way, just that experience for you.
It was exciting. I mean, it was gratifying in a sense, because both my producer Laura Norton and I knew that she was very talented and something big was going to happen to her, and we managed to snatch her before she got snatched away, which was very exciting. And she was wonderful because, she's a tremendous actor. She's young, so she has a lot of instinct, and she also has a lot of craft now because she has some experience. But what she did was, there was a kind of different vibe that she brought onto set, which was helpful for some of the actors who I was working with. Hadn't done a lot of screen. They were excellent, but they had done a lot of theater. So she brought a kind of relaxedness to us and offered it as a vibration that we could then pick up on, which was fabulous. So it was a great addition to the team.
And it's interesting because you mentioned a little bit before the interview how her character was in a way added for the film. There's four characters in the play, and there's five in the film. Although she appears as a sort of a projection in the play. What went into that decision to create, to fully flesh out that character and have her become an integral part of the storyline?
It was about... it was a practical thing. I don't want to give too much away, but there's a story that comes up that needed to be manifested more clearly and more viscerally. So we developed. That character was an appearance in the play. She was kind of a sort of a sign from another world, kind of a ghostly apparition. And so we wanted to keep, I wanted to keep that kind of ghostly number, the kind of invasion of her coming into the world, this kind of tight, closed world of these sort of twisted people in this weird house. I wanted her to be something that was going to influence it. I wanted to have more, I wanted both the main protagonist, Sandy, and Ellie, the girl, I wanted them to be able to break the cycle that's going. I don't want to give too much away, right? Because it's sort of the plot of the film. But, you know, there needed to be some agency on the part of the victims in this plot to break it. And that's sort of what she brought. That's what that character brought. And why I got a good element.
You know, giving your acting background, how do you think that affects your directing style? Because, in my theater experience, they always say, even when I was in acting school, we took a directing course, and I know a lot of directors took acting courses just so they have that contrast. What was it like for you transitioning into that world and how you work with your actors, given your background?
Well, I had a great time working with my actors, and, I've always had a good rapport with them, and we work so much together that we have to have a second language. We know the characters so well, we can, that was very much a shorthand. I was most excited about, and I know that my learning curve was in using the camera. So I had a friend of mine, Alan Boone, came on quite late in the process because we lost a teacher not long before shooting. And my friend Alan is very experienced and very generous and very creative and talented. I had a few free weeks. He said, sure, I'll come on and help you out. Well, that's fantastic. So he was tremendous help to help me take what were fledgling ideas about pictures and how to put them together and the practicalities of getting that done. So I come to him with him. Crazy shot. I said, let's do this in a one or two. And we'll swing around here, we'll swing this. Okay, well, this may be a little more complicated than you think because the practicalities of lighting and the way I light and so on. So there was some adaptation to go there. And so that was, the thing that I relied on most is knowing that whatever was on in front of the camera was going to be compelling acting. And that we were going to, I was going to rely on the most efficient choices that I could make. Because we shot for 2 weeks. It was a micro budget. We got money from the internet from a very generous Indiegogo campaign. Everybody in Toronto helped. I had donations from between like $5,000 to like $5. Everybody helped as much as they could. So that was wonderful, but it was a low budget, very low budget. There was a lot of spirit involved. I think the film budget's way above its weight for that kind of budget. I felt like the fundamentals of writing and the acting were there, and the rest I was going to learn on the fly. and I feel like I did.
Well, just on the topic of budgets, there's Hollywood, and then there's everything else.
Yeah.
You have, $300 million series, and then you have films that are made for $12. Having such a, tight financial restraints or having such a relatively low budget compared to what we're used to, what did that teach you about the filmmaking process, do you think?
That's a great question. I'm a fan of restriction, because I try to make it into a virtue rather than a lack, if I write something, I like to impose a structure on myself so that I have to work within a structure. I like it. So, in a sense, I've been on big budget movies and I've been on low budget movies, big budget TV, low budget TV, and sometimes I go, what's all that money? And if I had that money, what would I do with it? And of course, once you're in that position and you have a little bit of money, you realize how difficult and how quickly it can be spent. So, but we had done. I think what it forced me to do was to organize my thinking, organize my script, to start to think realistically about the artistic process and how it was going to serve getting the film done on time and without driving people crazy. And I felt like I managed, you know, to find a decent balance there. But certainly it made me think, okay, well, you know, because the play was also, it was a fringe play, so it was very low budget. And I thought, well, I want it to happen. I wanted it to be the most emotional impact as possible. So let's put four characters in a room. So formula has been done before, but, you know, it's fun to play. Put them in a tight room together and make them fight and see what happens. And that's, a good formula for a cheap play, a cheap story, you know? And if you can do it well, it's effective. So I thought maybe we could do the same thing with the film. I made sure we got one, basically one location. There's two locations, really, but one location for the majority of it. And we had some outside shots. And found the right one. And there's kind of like Providence, you know, smiles sometimes when you just believe it's going to happen. And sometimes it happens. I was trolling Airbnb for locations. And I come up with all kinds of different ones, and then we found this perfect, weird, futuristic house in the middle of Mississauga. I was on Airbnb. We wanted to shoot it in December, and the guy said, I can't do it to the price you want. It's too busy a time. And I said, well, what about January, February? Like, nobody comes to Toronto then. He was like, yeah, okay, let's talk then. So, you know, he was a great guy, and he was very generous, and he gave us a good price on the house. So we found that, really, and I talked to my production designer, Daria Branish. She's fantastic. I showed her a couple of options. She said, well, what about that one? I was like, well, they're more expensive than the other one. She was like, yeah, but it does so much work. And I was like, yeah, that's true. So, you know, that's what we went for. And because of that, we tried to make as efficient decisions as we could for the money that we had.
It's interesting, because I feel like sometimes when you have such tight restrictions, or whether they're self-imposed or not, the quality of the film is much higher, because you don't have, there's no wasteful spending. Did you find that in your experience? Because I know you've worked on bigger stuff as well.
I think I hope to have that experience again. I did. I mean, I was very pleased with how well everybody worked and how efficient and creative everybody was, and everybody entered into the spirit of it. And the thing that I made sure is we had good food. I was like, whatever happens, we've got to make sure that there's some decent food when everybody breaks for summer. You know, it's the middle of winter and we're in the middle of Mississauga. You know, let's make sure we eat, because there's going to be emotions are going to run high. So that was a good formula to make sure that everybody was looked after food-wise. It sounds kind of silly, but really it does make a difference. And, you know, money wasn't spent where it needed to be spent, and it hasn't been spent to this day. So that, in a sense, I think is a great lesson anyway. Like for my next film, which I hope to get some more money for, I hope to be as efficient with the budget. So if there's any producers out there listening, know that I know how to spend money, and I know how to not spend money. You know, I think it's a good lesson for filmmakers.
You know, it's interesting when we talk about, you know, micro budget, at least in this country, because it's not that it's unique to this country, but the Canadian film industry doesn't necessarily have the mechanisms that Hollywood does.
Yeah.
And does that make it easier or more difficult, do you think, for films to get made in this country?
I don't know. It's a very good question, and I've thought about it a lot and talked about it a lot with my friends. Is it easier in other countries? Is it easier in the States? Is it easier in England? I have no idea, because I think wherever anybody is making films or offering mechanisms to make films, there are filmmakers trying to get those mechanisms to make films, to make their films. So in England, I mean, there's, you know, just to take, you know, the sort of main, I guess, cultural influence of us, America and England, States and England, you know, there's funding, there's public funding for artistic films. I think it's probably super hard to get. I think getting funding for an American film is super hard. I think it's hard to get funding here. I think there's a lot of... One can spend a lifetime complaining anywhere in the world. So I tried fairly early on in my life, which is not as early as I would like to, sort of try to eliminate complaint situations and say, everybody's got a heart, just make it so that you can make it, figure out a way to make what you want to make, and make sure it's as good as you can make it, so that people don't... you know, we've all seen movies where you go, shit, how should that cost? And crap. And I just hope, I know, people will say that, but I just hope that the fewest people will say that about my movie. I don't know if that's a lofty enough goal, but it's good enough for me.
the crowdfunding, crowdsourcing is everything these days. You can crowdfund virtually anything you want. Although, especially on Indiegogo, movies are very popular. Just that overall experience for you as a storyteller, how did you find it?
It was great. I very hard work, but there was such a liberty about it because I've applied, you know, we have a wonderful granting system in Canada. We're lucky. We've got granting systems, we've got people thinking about it, we've got avenues by which to apply for things. All that stuff is genuinely, you know, very lucky. The shortcoming I personally find it as a creator is that it forces me to make a decision about what I'm making almost too quickly. Because I have to justify it. I have to figure out how I'm going to justify it. And I created a different... I like to create in a way that excites me, and sometimes I don't know how to justify to other people why it's until I've finished it. I say, well, did you like it? And it was good, you know? But the crowdfunding thing was great because, first off, I had a property that a lot of people knew. They knew the film, because most of my friends are in the theater community and small film community and stuff, and they had either seen it or heard of it. So I had something that I could depend on. I had good reviews. I had a good product that I could kind of push out there. It's a good product, but you know what I mean. But there, every time I got a donation, it was a blessing to go forward with whatever my vision was going to be. And so there wasn't the feeling of testing. In a sense that I, and maybe this is just my personal thing. Maybe when you're applying for a grant or an image of mine, they should feel they're celebrating something rather than being tested on something. Maybe that's a psychological change that you have to make. But certainly with the Indiegogo, I felt like I could celebrate something and people were going to celebrate along with me and go, yeah, go for it, give it a shot. It's not much of an investment, and let's see what you come up with. And, you know, practically, it also builds your audience as well. You know, I'm sure you know, you're younger than I am. You're more used to Indiegogo stuff and crowdfunding and internet and all that stuff. I remember, drawing posters and photocopying them and putting them up on the folder. And there was a guy who would put up posters, and he was the only guy who would do it. If you wanted posters put up on walls, you had to get this guy to do it. He had a team of guys who ran around. You know, remember that guy at all?
Vaguely, yeah.
Anyway, he would tear down. If you put up your own posters, he'd tear them down.
Right,
so
yeah.
You have to go to this guy. Anyway, that's like, yeah. Now it's kind of all over the internet. It's a different kind of situation. Revealing my age, but, you know, whatever.
You know, it's interesting, because I've talked, you know, I happen to know a lot of people who have crowdfunded, and there's Indiegogo and there's Kickstarter, and I know people choose one for various reasons. Was there a debate amongst you or your team about why you chose Indiegogo over Kickstarter? I know they take different amounts of money depending on what you raise and stuff, or was it just because Indiegogo can be easier for Canadians?
I'm not sure. I think you'd probably better ask Laura and Norton about that, my producer, and Emily Andrews from Film Coop. They had a bit more input on that. I believe there was some discussion at Kickstarter. You either had to come up with your money, or you lost all your money. So we didn't want to do that.
Right.
You know, we wanted to keep whatever money we made. We did end up getting our goal, which was great. But I think it was 6,500. I didn't notice that. That was the only difference that I was concerned about, was to make sure that whatever money we managed to raise, we got to keep it. But yeah, they've got a good gig. I mean, they take a percentage of it's just a piece of software.
Yeah, exactly.
It's great.
Yeah, why not? I mean, in terms of, you know, whenever you do these crowdfunding things, you always have to come up with, I guess, not rewards, but, you know,
yeah,
perks. Perks, for the people who donate. Which in a way can be difficult for a micro budget film because you don't necessarily. Have the mechanisms, to go back to that word, to offer something of true value like a bigger budget film might,
yeah.
You know, like, you know, a cast autograph or shirts or this,
yeah,
or that or whatever. So how did you go about finding what to give those who donated?
We just tried to be as creative as possible, and we're just about to start rolling out the perks now, so it'll be, talk to me in a couple of weeks when we start talking about it. We wanted things to be meaningful to the project. One that was going to not tell people they're going to spend the money on a perk. Like, most of them are electronic, so that they can be done fairly cheaply, but they are unique, you know, soundtracks, and that we're going to draw from the creativity of the project. So, you you know, because it was a play first and had a lot of quotables in it, we sort of drew from that. We were going to have great music in it, so we drew from that. And for the most part, I think where we were going, you know, the main perk was you're going to give a certain amount of money and come see the film before everybody else. And everybody was happy with that. And other than that, there were little perks that people were going to get. But I don't think people were giving money for the perks necessarily. Well, we had some good ones too, which we had there's a shot in the film which is, you could get in the film. Because there was a shot in the film where one of the characters was going through the house and all kind of quiet home at the party looking at photographs. And there were photographs telling the story of Sandy and Dick who in the house and their perfect marriage and their perfect lives and so on. So we were able to get people in the photographs. It's part of their family or friends of their family. So that was kind of a fun, easy perk to do. There's also a nefarious binder, which features people in it. You have to come see the film to find out what the binder's about. But we would have people who would give a certain amount of money and they could be featured in the binder. So there's ways, sneaky ways of getting into the film.
You know, given I guess the length and time frame that it can take to make any type of, you know, especially micro budget film, which, you know, I've heard of films that take, you know, 4 years,
yeah,
you know, from shooting and into release. Yeah, has it sunk in that, you know, in a week and a half or whatever it is, 2 weeks that it's actually going to be in theaters in Canada, in the city that you shot it in?
Yeah. It's some of it has sunk in. I'm very excited. I feel like it's a milestone to reach. You know, I'm really happy that we can open it in Toronto because it is a Toronto story. Toronto actors, Toronto theater community is the reason why it exists. And I love the Toronto theater community because it's, you know, I found a home here and I found creativity here and I found like-minded people. And I found people who were going to get things done willy-nilly and it was going to be fun and it was going to be boundary pushing. It was going to be exciting. So I've always loved that about Toronto. It's the reason I'm here, because the creativity is fantastic. So I can't wait to share it. I hope people like it. I have no idea. So I got my fingers crossed. I'm really excited that it's going to be on a big screen with 5.1 sound. And it's going to be immersive, or fully immersive. It's going to be overwhelming for me. I don't know what I'm going to do.
Yeah. One thing that struck me well, because I did see the trailer, is this set, and to me, this set looks very much like a theater set, in a way. I think just the aesthetics of it. Was that a conscious choice for you, would you say, or was it just, do you feel it was natural because you were coming from the theater world?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, there is kind of a question always about how does, you know, what is the difference between theater and film? And if you've got a scene working in theater, does it work in film in the same way? And so I was curious about how that was going to go. And so it's reflective in the shooting. It's reflective also in the situation. It's a party where people are performing for one another, you know. And the house that we wanted to have a kind of a futuristic house. And we found it. And that was going to be about, you know, this is about group of people who are finding themselves under the microscope and performing for each other, finding themselves and other people whacking and, you know, poking each other and that kind of thing. So it may have that kind of feel to it. There is a, you know, there's a certain degree of slapstick in it as well. But that's the thing. I think that, you know, when you do have a dinner party, you have that kind of situation where things are falling apart, there's a theatricality to it, essentially.
Just on the aspect of a dinner party, I think both in theater and film, that's a plot device that we've seen 50, 60, 70 years. Why does that trope, if you will, work so well as a storytelling device?
I think because everybody's familiar with it. Everybody's been to a party that's falling apart. And everybody wants to go to a party that's falling apart. And not really be a part of it and just watch it or hear the story afterwards. You know, because you get disparate people in a room with different agendas, and you start to have alcohol flow or other things. And, you know, sometimes things fall apart. They show people at their worst and best. And you kind of have, you know, I just think it's a creative device, you know, different people fighting each other. And, you know, we see people for the small people they are and the big people they are.
What do you... I mean, obviously, many of your friends will have seen the stage version of this. What do you want the film audience to take away from this?
Laughs or have a good time. I mean, I think it's a comedy, but it is a very morbid comedy. It's a murky comedy. I think there's philosophical implications and moral implications of the story, but I don't want to burden people with them. I think the main thing is that it's darkly humorous, and I hope that we all share the gallows humor in the dark and laugh at things that scare us and, laugh at things that are deserved to be laughed at, satirize things that deserve to be satirized, and, champion things that deserve to be championed, It's like any good story. I hope that all those things happen,
Does art, any art form, storytelling medium, does it have to have a meaning behind it?
I think it does have a meaning behind it, personally. I think if you've got... I kind of go on the philosophy that if it's funny or if it's dramatically compelling, then it is literature. There's a reason why a joke is funny. So I think, it's a big question. I think if you... as I write stuff, I think, well, what am I trying to say? And then I kind of think, well, I'm just trying to say what the play is. I'm trying to say what the situation is. I'm trying to make the characters pure, their interactions pure. The kind of aesthetic of it needs to be strong enough that whatever meaning comes out is something that's natural. I meaning is often confused with moral. Like the moral of the story is this, and I get wary of that because as soon as I see something that's trying to tell me how to behave or tell me how to feel about certain things, I get allergic to it. And that I find sometimes happens. So I try to avoid that. I prefer, if I can, have dramatic or comedic situations like that, if anything other than drawing your eye and your heart to it, will raise questions, and those questions hopefully will have no answer or an individual answer for each individual person. And everybody will go away with different questions about it. That's what I hope.
What do you think that so many actors not only make the transition to directing, but a lot of them are able to do it very, very well? People like Clint Eastwood, Ron Howard, for example, Ben Affleck, even. And a lot of actors actually are better directors than they were actors.
It's a good question. I mean, I think acting is a magical kind of... It's magic. That's right. One director described to me as basically it's like, just fool people into thinking that what you're doing is real.
Right.
Which is a very offhanded way of kind of, talking about something that I, basically what I've dedicated my life to. But as far as directing goes, I think, a director friend of mine, Daniel Brooks, who's from town here, we were talking about a show that we were doing last fall. And just, acting as a writer is a writing medium. It is a writer's medium. You are writing when you're acting. I've always felt that way, I mean, I started acting because it was something that was emotionally fulfilling to me and creative. And I didn't have to deal with the fear that I had younger, not being a good enough writer to be able to write. I could I'd just come up with it on the moment. If I did that, then, get away with it. And then as time went on, I started wanting to write things because I didn't see the things coming up that I wanted to say. But I think, acting is storytelling in the moment. So I think you can get a good sense of how to tell a story when you're put on the spot and told to tell it. And that may be something that leads to stronger directors. I'm not sure, but...
So I guess I know you've directed before. You did some short films, and I think you did a documentary.
Yeah.
I saw. But how would you compare those experiences with doing a feature?
This feature was the most rewarding of them. I mean, the short films I've done have been enjoyable. They've been mainly sketches, like comedic short films, and they're lots of fun. You get them done in a day, and they're jokes. But the documentary was very difficult because it wasn't something that I there's a reason people are documentary filmmaking, there's a reason people are narrative filmmakers, and I think my strength is in the narrative filmmaking. But the thing I liked about this most of all was the control and the kind of the planning aspect of it. Documentary filmmaking is exciting, I think, for a lot of other filmmaking because there's less planning. Go out and get it, and you see it either becomes a story, you cobble it into a story, or you have to find out more and get more to make it a story. And I found that to be a chaotic experience. But the narrative filmmaking became more hands-on, more collaborative.
Do you ever think you will merge your two mediums and you will direct yourself?
I'd like to. I talked to a friend of mine who's a DP, Steve Cousins is a really nice DP, very celebrated DP, and he was talking to me about that very thing. He said, you have to be careful of it. If you direct yourself, you still don't have an objective eye on the camera. So that's difficult. That's something I struggle with. But I've often thought about how to try to strategize to do that, because it would be very nice and fun.
But I know it's a challenge for, I mean, I've done it, you know. It was so challenging because, like, I was the writer, I was the director, I was the actor, and I was also an acting producer. So it was just, and trying to do all, I found that, I mean, I was like 26 or something when I did it, but trying to do all five things at once. Each one takes away from the other.
Yeah.
That makes sense, you know? And it would be, it's difficult to do in film. It would be suicidal to do that in theater. As I'm sure you're aware, just like, because it's live, you're just like, I can't. Yeah.
It's tricky because the more hats you wear, the more you're thinking about another thing other than what you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, it's like, okay, I'm trying to learn lines, but I also need to set up the shot on my head. Or, you know, okay, wait, but is the budget in this? Or, you know, like, okay, do I want to change this line? I'm the writer, so I can do that.
Yeah.
As an actor, I can. As the writer, I can.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, and you have all these things, and then you're also trying to direct the actor on the scene with you, which another actor should never do, and it's, you know.
Yeah. That's difficult. You're directing your scene part.
That's
it's a challenge. People do it, though.
Yeah.
People do it, and they do it successfully.
Yeah.
How was your experience? Were you satisfied with what you came up?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that, you know, I probably a little bit overacted. And I think that was the fact that I was compensating for not being 100% everywhere because I had to think about so many things, and so that got unnecessarily heightened, maybe. I think the overall look of what we were doing turned out pretty well in terms of the story we were trying to tell. So, like, from sort of the bigger picture, I was happy with it. I think, you know, and we're always, I think actors, you probably know this, we're our own worst critic. We are so self-critical, too.
Yeah.
So it's just like, I wish I'd done this, or this, or whatever, right? You know. So
you always revisit the performance and only I'd done it differently.
I mean, it's a good thing it was very small scale, you know, it was just a trailer.
Right.
You know, the project never went anywhere, but it was a good thing to experience, I guess, you know, and I enjoy going back and forth, but, you know, I probably should become better at each individual thing before trying to merge them together,
right,
I guess,
right.
You know.
But you gotta learn things, you know, learn things along the way.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you had mentioned that you were, you know, although you trained as an actor, you were maybe not looking to transition into director, but doing a lot more behind the scenes stuff. Now that you've had your first taste of this world, how are you enjoying it?
Oh, I love it. I love it. I absolutely love it. I'd love to do it again. I'm going to look for other projects to try. I'm hoping this will launch me to be able to do other projects. You know, I have some ideas.
Would you, and this is a debate that I have with a lot of people. Would you ever direct something that you haven't written? And would you ever let somebody else be in control of something that you wrote?
Yeah. I mean, I have. I have a friend of mine who's directing a play that I wrote. He's directing a workshop of a play that I wrote this morning on Sunday at the Theater Center at 7:30 p.m. If you want to come see it, on March 24th. Anyway, he's directing that, and we have a good partnership. And I've directed a short film that a friend of mine wrote, and I enjoyed that as well. I mean, I think it's, and I had a friend of mine, I did a play that I wrote at the Tarragon Theater. I had a friend of mine, Lisa Peterson from New York, came up and directed it. And finding that right collaboration is perfect because, you know, you do need somebody else to look at your stuff and provide you with another perspective. You want to make sure that it's the right person, because I've had people look at my stuff who aren't the right people to provide you with the other perspective, and they can kind of screw you up. But if you are careful about it, you find the right person. Depends on your personality, of course.
Right.
For me, I need to be careful about it, get the right person to do it. And if they do, then it makes it, you know, go a lot farther than, you know, what I would be able to do by myself.
And how do you, you know, on that note, how do you know that you're the right person for the job? If you're directing somebody else's work, for example?
I would have to know that I just vibes with it. I think it's the same thing with acting. Like, sometimes if I'm offered a job and I kind of, there's nothing against the writer or the director or anything like that, but I don't feel the material, then I will politely decline. Because if it doesn't kind of vibe with you, then it's best not to do it.
Right.
It's best to wait until something does. You know?
Yeah. Well, the film is Pond Life. And it opens in Toronto on the 29th?
22nd.
Yeah. Oh, perfect.
Friday the 22nd. 7 p.m. Scotiabank Theatre, Film Festival.
Yeah, there you go. You must be excited that the day is finally here.
Yeah, I'm very excited. Yeah, I'm hoping it's the beginning of a successful festival run.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll get it screaming to people publicly, you know, sooner or later.
Do you enjoy the quote-unquote festival life, festival season?
I'm not sure. I've been to it as an actor. I've not really been to it as a filmmaker. I mean, I've been to a couple of festivals as a documentary filmmaker. There were tons of them. But I'm excited about this one.
Well, we look forward to seeing the film when it comes out. Gord Rand, thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks,
man. That was my conversation with Gord Rand. His film Pond Life is out now. Stay tuned for my episode on Saturday, which features directors Jill Carter and Catherine Legg. And next week, I'll be featuring an interview with actor Dave Sheridan. And exclusive announcement, we have an upcoming interview with member of the Bare Naked Ladies, Kevin Hearn. I'm super excited about that. So stay tuned for that. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Bye for now.